Maximus Confessor writes perhaps a little less than a century after the time of Dionysius the Areopagite, although again it's not easy to date Dionysius' writings precisely, but they have become widespread and well known, and Maximus uses them, regards them extremely highly, and tries to make them more comprehensible, more useful for people who want to see in this tradition a way of both understanding of, and of delighting in the many powerful and beautiful symbols and means of being more deeply consecrated to God that are provided in the liturgy. And so in his Mystagogy, he follows in the tradition of Cyril and Ambrose of explicating the rituals and in particular the rite, the liturgy of the Eucharist for the people of God. Now he is writing much later. Infant baptism has become much more widespread. Strong emphasis on the sacraments of initiation as a place of catechesis has begun to shift by the time of Maximus, and now his catechetical effort, his desire for teaching, is to teach Christians, people who have already been baptized, who are already a part of the Church, and for whom the weekly experience of the liturgy can be a means of deepening in their own spiritual life. So he is primarily writing so that people can understand the deeper symbolism of the liturgy using these mysterious and somewhat difficult to understand writings of Dionysius as a background and trying to adapt and develop them. He is also very influenced by the categories and writings of Evagrius Pontus, in particular the idea of there being a progression in the spiritual life from asceticism, that is to say a life of seeking for the virtues, into beholding God in creation, theoria physici, and God beyond all creation, theologia. That we saw in Evagrius's writings in the 4th century. It has its own echo in the Dionysian texts that we've just looked at, in Dionysius' emphasis on both the apophatic and the cataphatic. But for Maximus, these are not obscure theological or spiritual categories. These are things that we see acted out for us every Sunday, whenever we celebrate the Eucharist, or daily. And we have the opportunity to understand them as external symbols of our own deepening union with God. So he, in this, in these writings, is taking individual elements, individual moments in the celebration of the Eucharist, and providing them with an allegorical, symbolic significance. He says that just as a kind of a background to the liturgy itself, if you drop down in chapter 21, that when in the liturgy we behold with the angels on high the invisible and ineffable glory, and then when the sacrament transforms into itself those who worthily partake of it, the Eucharist is transforming us more and more into beings like the God who has given himself to us in the Eucharist, then we see the source of our grace in union, and he says, then the language of divinity can even be applied to human beings because all of God entirely fills them. Maximus Confessor is one of the great exponents of a notion of theosis, of divinization, and for him it chiefly occurs in the sacraments and in our liturgical experience of the great images that the Church provides us with in those celebrations. So he distinguishes between different levels of meaning that we can see in liturgical actions. And if you drop down to the large text that's highlighted called Image of the Spiritual Journey, he's saying that the Church itself, the external Church, is a reminder of our spiritual progress towards God. It's an image of the human person. It has a sanctuary and it has a nave. It has a part where the most holy actions take place and a part where the whole assembly gathers. And that, he says, is a symbol of the soul. It's a symbol of the innermost self. Now, if you drop down a little below that to the paragraph that begins, "The first entrance during the Eucharistic celebration signifies," this is his mode of interpreting these things. He'll give what I've translated here as a broadly speaking, a general meaning, and then he will give 1, 2, 3 specific meanings of these of each of these actions. So, and one still has this in the Eastern liturgy, the first entrance, that is the first procession through the nave and then into the sanctuary, symbolizes or signifies, broadly speaking, the first appearance of Christ our God and the conversion of those who are led by him and with him. And here he gives three different interpretations: from unbelief to faith, the first level, coming to faith; a second level, turning from vice to virtue; and then from ignorance to knowledge, to the knowledge of God. And that's what he'll do: a general interpretation, and then 1, 2, 3, usually asceticism, theology of God in creation and God beyond creation. And he distinguishes, again, using language that we find in Evagrius, if you drop down just a little bit more, the readings that then happen. He gives a broad interpretation. They signify the divine intentions and wishes by which everybody should be instructed. And now he gives three levels of meaning, which is appropriate to all believers. That is to say, to those who are coming to faith. I mentioned that this was primarily for people who are already a part of the community of the Christian faithful, not primarily for neophytes or initiates, but he does speak about the fact that there is a part of the community, and indeed a part of ourselves, that is constantly struggling with and coming to faith, and another part of the community and part of ourselves that is using that faith as a way of coming into a practice of virtue. Again, this is a very beautiful Christian way of seeing this, that faith comes first, then it's reflected in the practice of virtue, or the practice, as Evagrius calls it, and then through spiritual knowledge we experience contemplation of God. A beautiful sense of these three movements that are taking place constantly within the heart, and for him, these three movements are expressed in every liturgical action or gesture. So this first entrance signifies the teaching and progress. I should say this is a description of the readings rather than of the first entrance itself. Teachings and progress according to faith for believers. For those who practice asceticism, their disposition towards virtue, their standing firm. And for those who seek spiritual knowledge, that they are borne up, carried up, gathered together by the inner meanings of these external things that they see. So he's trying to say that all the things we see in the church can have these multiple levels of meanings at our seeking deeper faith level, our seeking to live out our faith in a life of virtue level, and in our contemplative appropriation of the mysteries concerning God. All of these levels are simultaneously present in the actions that we see in church. Now, in our context of understanding liturgical prayer better, I was particularly intrigued by and delighted by this section that I've labeled Chant, a Source of Spiritual Zeal. He says that the melodies of the chants are a reflection of the divine pleasure and delight that takes place in all of us. By means of these chants, we are strengthened. We forget our past labors, and we are, he says, renewed in eager desire. The chants of the liturgy, the liturgical experience that we have at the Divine Office and at the Eucharistic celebration, renews us in desire. Then the gospel, he says, is, and he uses again this, first of all, the broad sense, it's a symbol of the fulfillment of this present age. More specifically, in number one, the disappearance of what we would call original sin. He calls it the primordial deception. For those who practice virtue, he gives an interpretation of that. For those who are pursuing spiritual knowledge, the gospel becomes an understanding of the inner meanings of all the variety of complex imagery with which the liturgy is filled. And he also provides, and please read this on your own, an interpretation of the action of the bishop coming down from his chair to dismiss the catechumens. That for him also has rich symbolic significance at all these levels. And so does the singing of the hymn Holy, Holy, Holy. The Sanctus becomes for him a very powerful symbol. And again, he has a broad interpretation and then a more specific application. All of these things are reminders of the fact that the liturgy becomes a place of contemplative prayer, an experience of alternation between God present in the many in diversity and God beyond all of those things, reaching beyond all imagery and word.